In 1985, you were executive director then of the Jewish Federation.
Yes.
How big was the Jewish community then, and how big is it today?
It's a little more than it is today. We've shrunk probably near 1,000 people. But I don't want to advertise how big we are or how small we are, and I'll tell you why. One time, a reporter came to me and asked me how many Jewish people in Tulsa. I gave him the number, and it ended up in the paper as 25,000. There are 25,000 Jews in Tulsa. I was so mad that morning, I was going to call the Tulsa Tribune in those days and tell them. Then I thought to myself, what am I going to tell them that for? Those anti-Semitic people out there, let them think there's 25,000 Jews in this town, and we can rise up against them if we need to. But it was about a tenth of that size, something like that. We're in a situation now also where we're trying to recruit Jewish people to come to these smaller towns, and we are still a smaller Jewish town. Most Jewish people went to metropolitan areas, and we'd like to get some of them to come back to our area.
Throughout the state of Oklahoma, too, the number could be a fairly significant number.
Just double. Not
double whatever the number is
double
we have in
Tulsa. Whatever the number is, double it.
All right.
There's only Oklahoma City and very few Jews anymore outside of that area. There were six Jewish families in Joplin when the tornado came. Fortunately, they all survived and are fine.
I did bring up Fort Chaffee, which is in northwest Arkansas near the town of Fort Smith. Give us some background and why you made that visit.
Well, when I was with the Community Service Council, we worked with immigrant groups. The Cubans came in at that time. And the Vietnamese in 75 came in. And people came here, didn't know the language. They needed something in their language to understand what was going on. So at Community Service Council, I hired two people, one that could write Spanish and one Vietnamese. We put out newsletters. We made copies of what happens when a tornado siren goes on. It happens and you don't know what to do. How do you deal with the police in Oklahoma? This is not the air country where the police are taking money under the table, except for a few that were taken care of. They're gone. And you can trust the police and you can call the police. If your child has a problem, you don't have to hide from the police. When the second round of the Vietnamese, those are people who we called boat people, came out. Not the first group. The first group that came out, Jerry and I were volunteers for, and they were people that knew English, a lot of them. They had worked for the Army in Vietnam, in Saigon, and they pretty much could make it on their way. But we worked with a number of those people who are very good friends today. A lot of young boys came in who sneaked out because of the Army. They were lost because there's no women to tell them what to do, tell you the truth. We men need women to tell us what to do. And so Jerry became a mama for quite a few of those young boys. So every year at Christmas time, Jerry gets Christmas cards from those boys with pictures. This is my family. This is my wife. These are my three kids. Mama, I'll always remember you when I came here from Vietnam. Merry Christmas to you. That's the good stuff that happens in our family, not from me, but from Jerry. Most of the good stuff happens from Jerry. Anyhow. Then Hias, who's the Hebrew Immigration Society, called up the Federation and said, look, the federal government is asking us for help with the Vietnamese. They're coming out in droves. They're not being picked up, and they're floating on these ships. We helped Hias and gave grants to Hias when Hias brought in Jews in the early parts of the century and before. We'd like now Hias to take some responsibility for bringing some Vietnamese.
Immigrant Aid Society.
And that's been our Catholic Social Services, our Protestant Presbyterian Social Services. That was our national organization that helped us bring Jews to this country. We got involved in bringing in the Soviet Jews. Remember, that was a big movement. The first plane that went in when the walls went down in the Soviet Union was purchased for seven figures by a Tulsa man, Jewish man in Tulsa, who would never let me give his name, and he bought that first plane to bring out those first Jews. So we were very involved in Soviet Jewry. We raised a lot of money, much more money than most communities. I had trouble at the Federation, to tell you the truth, to bring Soviets into the United States. Because there are some people on Federation board, like there are all over, that feel everybody should go to Israel, and all the Soviets should go to Israel. Well, all the Soviets didn't want to go to Israel, And all of our parents and grandparents didn't want to go to Israel. And so that's the point I had to make against some powerful people who felt everybody should go to Israel. And so we brought quite a number to Tulsa. Eventually, most of them left because they want to be with their families. They want to be with people who speak the same language, the same culture. If I were a Soviet Jew, I'd rather be in Coney Island, Brighton Beach, than it would to be on 23rd Street in Peoria in Tulsa. Anyhow, that was a good experience for our community. A lot of volunteers helped us in that.
So having a track record now of years of successful resettlement, the United States government asked Hyas to apply those experiences to resettling Vietnamese.
So when I went to Chaffee and spoke to those people there and others, they told me that there were Catholics and Buddhists coming from Vietnam. Most of the Christian Vietnamese were taken by churches to help them. You had to have support for them to teach them English, to get some education, job training, all of that business was done by their agencies. But Buddhists were only welcome if they could be converted to Christianity. Sorry, but that's the situation that has been. It happened the minute Soviet Jews got off the boat or off the airplane in New York. There were societies there who made believe they were Jewish and convinced them to come to a temple and get a meal. The Soviet Jews didn't understand their religion. They were not allowed to practice their religion for over a generation. They didn't really know themselves what being Jewish was. The only thing was good in those days of being Jewish is they let you out of Soviet Union. And therefore, we took Buddhists. We had no Jewish Vietnamese that we could find. No. There were no Jewish Vietnamese. And so we brought Buddhists in. Jews are not prone to proselytize. We've been, for thousands of years, murdered for not wanting to pray to another person. So we don't do it to the next person. Buddhists felt comfortable living with Jews, I guess. Agnostics and Jews are the best people for them to find. Through that experience, we brought in a number of families. The families did pretty well here. Owned a restaurant we had, if you recall. It was a Vietnamese restaurant here for a long time. When Jerry became a helper in that restaurant and ended up 8 years as the waitress in that Vietnamese restaurant, and can give you an order of anything on that menu and serve it with chopsticks. Also then, the boat people needed to come in, and we brought in some of the boat people. And the Jewish community also, we had volunteers to help with that. Through that experience, we had a young man that came to live with us for a short time. He's the father of our two grandkids that are sitting right here, and the husband of this young lady in the middle. This is our family. We talked about our natural kids and their children. This is Tien Tran. Many of you know her from her nail business. Not nails that you hammer in a wall, nails you have out here. A top business lady in this community. And these are her two children. Stand up and just say hello. I'm sorry, honey. These are the most shy kids. This is Tina. Her dad lived with us for some 14, 15 years before Jerry figured out how to get him married. Now we have these two. And this is Jimmy Tron. And they both go to Union School. Friday nights, they're at our house for Kiddush. They both graduate Heritage Academy, but they're Buddhists. Their parents are Buddhists. Their grandparents in Vietnam are Buddhists. And Jerry wouldn't have it any other way, and she runs the roost in my house. I'm embarrassing the heck out of them because they're very embarrassed kids. But they're wonderful kids, and we love them. Friday night, they come and have Shabbos dinner with us every week, along with Tien. Jimmy and I do the Kiddush. She can do the Kiddush in Hebrew as good as anybody can do. Tina learned it all perfect, but she doesn't want to sing out loud. They have Passover with us when we're in town. So they're our grandkids. We're just proud of them. I assure you, they brought more to us than we brought to them.
Their father you took in
yes.
as a young man
yes.
into your own home.
That's right.
Why him, and why did you decide he needed to come into your home?
Because he came here with a brother, and the brother was not very good to him, and he was sort of the slave of the brother. He never had the opportunity to do anything on his own. And the brother had been in the army many years, and they didn't know each other that well, but they were brought here together. And we took the both of them. Excuse me, kids. Excuse me, Tien. He had no education. As most Vietnamese did, or many of them, they knew their own language, So it wasn't as hard for them to learn English. He didn't know his own language. He could speak it, but he couldn't write. He was illiterate in his language. Therefore, it was difficult for him to get along. And Jerry took a liking to him. That's all he needed. He wasn't the only kid we ever brought to our house. My oldest daughter tells me to this day, how could you bring these people in? In the morning, we would wake up to get ready for school, and there'd be somebody sleeping on the living room floor. Somebody on a couch. Didn't know who they were. We didn't know very well who they were. I would ask Jerry to bring them home for the night. I was counseling with him. I used to work with Traveler's Aid, and somebody would come in to the bus station that didn't speak English from Canada. We had a French couple stayed with us for quite a while. We had a barber from New York. The only way we could get them out of our house, Jerry turned the living room into a barber shop, and all our friends, including Fred Strauss, would come and get a haircut for this guy till he could earn enough money to move on. And so different people through the years have been in our house. One neighbor loaned me a trailer, and we put it in our driveway, and a couple lived there for quite a long time. But this is something that Jerry and I have gained from. Most of us had grandparents, great-grandparents who came to this country without a dime, like their father came, without a dime. We don't know that story, and especially my kids didn't know that story. So it was a good experience to see Yom, their father, name is Yom. Jerry named everybody you see at this side of the chairs. Learned English from Jerry at home, finally to where he could speak and read enough English that he could go to work. First job I got for him was at McDonald's, in the kitchen of McDonald's. I put him there for the night shift, 9 o'clock or whatever it was. They were open late. I forgot which McDonald's I took him to. And I went to this McDonald's, to that McDonald's. In those days, they didn't have many Vietnamese working, I assure you. Vietnamese guy works here. No, no. Yes, I'm telling you, he's washing your dishes right now back there. I tell him, no, he's not. So go back and see. And he just kept sweeping this floor until I got there. Must have swept the floor 20 times. He spoke to English in those days, didn't know what to do. Anyway, it's been a broadening experience for us, for our children especially, who grew up like every other American kid and didn't know what it really was to come in here without anything.